You're listening to Vatican Radio. A traumatic tale of five children who were sexually abused by their father formed the centrepiece of an international child protection conference that concluded at the Pontifical Gregorian University on Thursday. The annual Anglophone Safeguarding Conference brought together 111 delegates from bishops' conferences and religious congregations around the world. They discussed the theme of celebrating hope for survivors of abuse, for those working in child protection, and even for the abusers themselves. The conference was jointly organised by the Bishops' Conferences of Scotland and Malta, together with the Gregorian University's Centre for Child Protection, which has pioneered training in all aspects of safeguarding in the church. To find out more, I spoke to one of the principal organisers, Tina Campbell, who serves as National Safeguarding Coordinator for the Catholic Bishops of Scotland. You've been hosting this meeting here, together with the Bishops' Conference of Malta and the Gregorian Centre for Child Protection. The theme has been on hope, hasn't it? Celebrating hope. Tell us why this perhaps slightly strange choice of title for a conference about safeguarding.
Well, last year, England and Wales co-hosted with Kenya, and the theme was listening. And we decided that the importance of listening is very obvious and very relevant. But as the conference evolved, and I knew I was going to be hosting, and I approached Malta as the co-host, the theme of hope kept coming back. You know, where do we find hope? Where do we find hope for survivors? Where do we find hope for perpetrators? Where do we find hope for ourselves? Because working in safeguarding can be extremely demanding, and sometimes it might feel hopeless. So where do we find hope? So we went from hope as a main theme and thought, what does that mean on its own? But perhaps if we gather together, we should be looking at celebrating it. How do we find ways of celebrating hope?
You had testimony, didn't you, from a family who talk in very powerful terms about the abuse they suffered, and yet somehow they really symbolise this sense of hope.
Absolutely. I first met the Reed family probably in about 2011, 2012, because I was then I was working more fully as a psychotherapist in the health service. So I met them at a conference in Ireland where they spoke about their familial abuse at the hands of their father. And when I took up the national post in 2013, I invited them to come to Scotland to talk to our clergy. I then asked them just last year to come and talk to 70 representatives of religious orders in Scotland, because they symbolise hope in a very powerful way. So I suppose it was an extremely unusual step for the Anglophone here in Rome to invite a Protestant family from Northern Ireland, five daughters and one son, who are all now adults, they're married. Coincidentally, all of them are now therapists, some of them actually working with survivors, although making a very deliberate choice not to work with offenders themselves. And they tell their story in such a powerful way that it's incredibly moving, but it brings a real sense of hope for survivors. And I think for some of the participants here at the conference, just that sense of recovery is possible. You know, many of us sadly meet survivors who are still locked into being victims because they have been so deeply damaged in the church. The Reed family, although they will admit to having their low points and difficult points, but they have each other in all that process. They have reached a point of being survivors who are actually thriving and can bring hope to others through their story.
What does their story say, though, to those people who can't recover from what happened to them?
I'm aware that perhaps, and we did have a survivor here as well as one of our delegates, and of course, to be fair, there will probably have been other survivors amongst our cohort of delegates that we would never know about. And I worry sometimes that the survivor might listen to their story and think, is that really ever attainable for me? They seem so together. But actually what they do is they deliver their story with such humanity and such honesty and can identify so much with the painful process. And they detail how even when they went to seek help, the help wasn't there and they were thrown back again. Very often, their father was allowed back into the house and the abuse continued. Their father established a new relationship and some of them were still allowed to have contact with him and the abuse continued. And I would hope that bit about even though it's a really horrendous struggle, there might be an element of hope there still for survivors who think, will there ever be? But there's something there to hold on to.
You've been looking, as you say, at hope for survivors, but also mm-hmm. hope for perpetrators.
Yes.
What does that mean? Some people would say, what hope can there ever be for someone who has committed the crime of abusing mm-hmm. a child?
In a sense, that is, in one sense, probably as difficult a concept as it is to imagine for a survivor who is struggling and is still very damaged and very, very distressed to find hope. For some perpetrators and offenders of abuse as well, the thought of actually reaching a point of, is there any hope for me? For those of us working in safeguarding in a diocesan or national role, of course, we have cut direct contact with offenders and perpetrators. We will be advising bishops and religious in terms of the management of offenders. And for some, it is very hard to find hope, you know, because their behaviours have led to criminal convictions, they have led to punishment, they will have led to rejection by their own family. There's very little light in that darkness of the life of a perpetrator, which for most of us we can only glimpse because it's very difficult to get inside that world. We can in some ways glimpse the world of a victim, a survivor, because they suffer and we all suffer. Not in the same way, but we all suffer. To get into the mind of a perpetrator and even into the mind of someone who finds children sexually attractive is something that's abhorrent for most people in the world. So to find hope in that context is really very difficult and very complicated. And yet for some of them, it's about walking alongside them to have a sense of purpose, somehow or other, that there is a sense of purpose, even in a life that's very restricted, in a life where they feel a great deal of shame, but to give them somehow a glimpse of hope. That, in a sense, is a huge challenge.
It's a decade and a half on now since the sex abuse scandals began breaking in the United States, in Boston in particular. How much is it possible over that time to really talk about progress?
I think there's a couple of things. I think we have to stop talking, as I hear some people still talking about, well, there'll never be any more abuse. We'll stop abuse. This will eventually be so effective, we'll stop abuse. Sadly, that's never going to happen because sadly, we will always have, regrettably, people who will want to harm children and the vulnerable. What has changed is that there is a greater awareness of accountability within the church, thank God, and also a greater ability for people to talk about this. It's no longer something that's talked about in hushed tones. It is talked about with honesty. It's talked about with transparency. And thank God for the many dedicated lay people who are very skilled professionals in this line of work who really want to fight for the truth. And sometimes it means going out on a limb to fight for the truth and to stand up. Sometimes it can have a huge cost. There is a cost to doing good. Good friends say that to me back in Scotland. You know, they talk about the cost of doing this work. I would hope that as we have started, even in Scotland, we have done our own historical review of case files. We are currently subject to a public inquiry for children in residential care. As all these things evolve, there should be a real desire and awareness that we have to journey on this path together. There can be no longer any idea that cover-up or concealment is loyalty to the church. It could never be seen as loyalty to the church.
Yes, you say this is now talked about openly and honestly, mm-hmm. but that's just not the case in many parts of the world. It may be true in Scotland.
Absolutely. Yes, that's a very good point. That became very evident in the last few days of being together because we're a very international conference. In the Western world, there is an ease about talking about these matters. We are aware that some of the countries present would find that very difficult. And for some of the countries present, sexual practices, sexual attitudes towards children are very different to how we would view them in the Western world. So there was a conflict there, an unease, an experience of being uncomfortable, and yet an acknowledgement today that hopefully this is a safe place for people to start expressing those feelings, expressing uncomfortable questions because they stand in great conflict with their culture and the countries from which they come. But it also raises for us a responsibility to work with some countries so that they start to have an understanding of the risks and vulnerabilities involved for harming children and young people.
Are you really seeing progress in this area of churches that up until now simply have said it's a Western problem, it doesn't happen in our countries?
I've seen over 9 years, I'm delighted this is my ninth Anglophone, when I first came, certain countries would say exactly that. The big shift for me happened in 2011 when Cardinal Levada sent the letter out on behalf of the Holy See, which said, we want your episcopal conferences to produce safeguarding policies. Where are they? And that produced a huge shift. So countries that were coming and saying, we don't have this problem, we have other problems, so they would be very honest about the other problems, but we don't have a problem about child abuse. Some would still talk about child abuse, but not talk about the abuse of vulnerable adults. Whereas we see the two as one, really. They're two areas which are very interwoven for us. Now they've had to submit their norms for safeguarding, for child protection. That can't be said anymore. What some countries do need is huge resources for training. Some of the Western countries need to be working with other countries to help them run training, look at cultural attitudes, teach how to identify risk, look at and understand the psychology and harm of abuse.
My thanks to Tina Campbell, National Safeguarding Coordinator for the Catholic Bishops' Conference of Scotland.